The podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Everybody, welcome to episode number 48 of The Payload. We are an Overwatch podcast from blizzpro.com. Today is December 8th, 2016 from Denver, Colorado. I am John Horstman. With me is the crew. First, from the randomest, most stupid city in all of California, it's Rosh. Hey, Rosh.
I feel like a lot of people would argue that LA is the stupidest city in California.
The traffic is the stupidest.
No, go to Central California.
Ooh, okay. See, I can't. I have no idea with that. But hi, I'm excited to be here from my random part of California. We have a lot of really exciting things to talk about. So I'm really excited, but I'm also kind of nervous because I don't know. We just have so much good stuff to get into. I don't know what this podcast is going to be like, but I'm excited for it. I'm ready to hop in.
We've got to step up our game this week. There's a lot of content that requires us knowing WTF is going on in Overwatch. So let's hope that we can do that. To help us, though, from Saskatoon, California. You don't know who I'm going to now. It's Camarillo, California. It's Jimmy Bloxham. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, always good to be here. And oh man, you weren't kidding. You showed us these show notes earlier in the day, and I was like, wow, it's a lot to go through. But I'm excited. Lots of esports news as we're ramping up towards 2017, and hopefully more details on the Overwatch League coming out next year.
You know, I've noticed something. You talked about the show notes. I find that the later I give you the show notes, the more prepared everyone tends to be, which is really weird. It's like cramming for a test. If you know all semester what is going to be on the test, you're like, I got it. And you know, whatever. And then you just never. But if you're like, it's tomorrow, you're like, oh, crap, I got to learn this stuff. I got to learn it right now. So we're trying a new thing here on The Payload. Last but not least, from Saskatoon, Canada, it's Kevin Avdestad. Hey, Kev.
Hey, John. Yeah, you know, it's true. If you give us the show notes, or if I go in and do my own edits to the show notes on, like, Monday, I will have largely forgotten about them by the time we get to a Thursday night recording, for sure. But no, we got a packed show tonight. We had a packed show every week, it feels like, right now, which is kind of amazing. I think about when we started The Payload, when we first kind of got underway, and we really did for a while there kind of struggle with, like, do we maybe just go bi-weekly? Is there going to be enough to talk about on a weekly Overwatch show? And now it feels like I'm to a point where I'm like, you know, it's almost not enough. Like, stuff happens so fast and so furious, and the enormity of what's going to go on over the next little while with Overwatch esports, it's kind of become its own thing. Like, we want to get together, we want to chat about the game and patches and what's ladder like and meta. And then by the time you try to cram in everything that's going on in the professional scene, it turns into a pretty massive undertaking to cover all that stuff.
It does. And I don't think we're the only ones that feel that way. I didn't put this in the show notes because I totally forgot, because it was kind of happening during last week's show. But the Game Awards were last week, and Overwatch overall for the entire night took Game of the Year. Jeez. Big deal. Big BFD. It took Best Game Direction, which is also really amazing, and Multiplayer Game of the Year and Esports of the Year. That is...
The Esports one surprises me a little bit, but I'm happy it did get that, because, I mean, that's huge for a game that wasn't even out all year, right? For 100% of the year, it was out in,
yeah,
I don't even remember, May? I can't remember exactly the release date, but feels like it's been out a while now.
Yeah, Sorry, go ahead.
I had that argument with somebody because I was really impressed with how well the game had performed at the Game Awards. Getting Game of the Year, I thought was very cool, especially considering it's one of the only multiplayer-only games, the only multiplayer-only game to ever actually win the award. Mm-hmm. But the eSport thing I thought was interesting because a lot of people were saying, you know, that doesn't make any sense. It wasn't even that big a deal in eSports. Like, it's going to be a big deal in 2017. Why are we giving it the award now? But I think if you look at, like, the growth parameters, right? League kind of did League, CSGO kind of did CSGO. And don't get me wrong, those scenes are both huge and impressive. Dota also obviously had probably the best, like, the benchmark year by which all eSports should be measured. But, yeah, like, I really do think that Overwatch came up the gate way stronger than any game has historically. When you look at, like, the lag time from a game's release to its eSport relevance, nothing has ever done what Overwatch is doing. It's a game that deserves to be celebrated for how fast it was embraced in that space. So I thought the award made a lot of sense. I know a lot of people would rather have seen the game they like watching more win. And I know there are obviously, like, there's probably some hiccups that need to be addressed in professional Overwatch in general, spectating being one of them. But yeah, I think it's a timely award. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think we're going to be really, really having a very different conversation about how incredible Overwatch esports is this time next year.
I think the Overwatch team needs to feel phenomenal about this, and Blizzard as a company in general, because in the end, Overwatch is kind of the remnants of Titan, right? That's all we basically know is, after Titan did its thing and people found out, nope, we're not doing that anymore, then we saw Overwatch, and Jeff Kaplan took on the team and they brought everything over, made Overwatch, and for it to be received in such a way, which Game of the Year, I'm like, easy, especially when you consider everything else that Overwatch has done. I'm like, yeah, I love that. I have no bias at all towards Overwatch being Game of the Year, but, you know, let's say I didn't, hypothetically, it's done some amazing things and has really kind of changed up the genre a little bit. In fact, when Overwatch is announced, I know of at least two serious competitors with Overwatch who have taken on close to or identical types of gameplay in that. I'm not going to say which is which, but, like, Paladins is one of those that's kind of, you know, really seen as directly competing with Overwatch. And for a team to go from, you know, a broken down team, like, imagine how demoralizing that is, working on something for years and to have it cut and then go, cool, make something new. And you're like, well, let's do this project that's overall small in scope, and you find something magical. I think that's just amazing. And I hope that the Overwatch team is incredibly proud of what they've done, because that's really amazing that they've done that and done that so quickly. The recognition out of the gate, not 2 years down the road, not 3 years down the road, right away.
All right. Yeah, I don't think there's any question. It was, like, easily the most impactful release of the year, not just because it's being played by so many people, sold so many copies. Like, they obviously look at a lot of metrics, but I think, like, the impact it's had on game design as a whole, right? On people looking at, we need better engines, we need better character design, more diversity. Like, it really stuck a pretty impressive landing when you stop and look at just how fast the entire industry scrambled to go, you know what, we need to react to this. Like, we now look out of place in our own industry as people evaluated how their product stacked up against Overwatch. That's the mark of something really special.
I agree.
Yeah, and also, just really quickly, I want to touch on this, just outside of the game, just look at the culture that's built around Overwatch, all the fan art, cosplay that was just immediately embraced by the gaming community, like, at large. And even however you feel about it, Gremlin Diva just blew up online and was just absolutely everywhere and still is everywhere. And that even was brought back into the game itself. Blizzard recognized that was a cool thing that the community had just ran with. And yeah, just all the fan art is just incredible. And people making up backstories of these heroes, Dad Soldier 76 and all this stuff. Yes! I mean, it's just, like, it's insane.
Give,
like,
me how Christmas much Dad 76. That's what yeah. I want.
Yeah, but I mean, just as a whole, I don't think I've ever seen a game get this quickly embraced by a community, and a community greater than just the community playing the game.
Yeah. I'm excited to play a part. I hope that we at the Payload supply a nice positive part of that community. And with that, let's go to the news.
This week in Overwatch.
Oh, we've got stuff to talk about, crew. First, we do want to thank our MVPs, Adam B, J A, Coral, and Tommy H. Thank you so much for the support of the Payload. We thank you. If you want to get involved, help support us so we can continue to put on an amazing show, bring on awesome guests, continue to make sure that the show sounds great, head on over to payload or patreon.com/payload podcast. We need to talk about some news here. So first, there is a event being teased for December 13th, which is Tuesday, aka Super Mario Run Day. And it's going to presumably be a holiday event. All we have from Overwatch right now is a date and a holiday greeting card. What are you guys making of this? Is this anything more than a holiday event?
I think it's pretty circled around a holiday event with Christmas coming up. But on top of the map, I'm excited for skins. I just want to see the Overwatch skins now, because I want Mercy to have a skin. I want it to be a candy cane skin. There are so many cool concepts that they could do with Roadhog, you know, and just all the other character customizations that I think it's going to be really good, and I really, really hope that Mercy gets a skin. I know she's gotten a skin for every other holiday, but she seems to be a favorite, so hopefully I can bet on them having another skin for her too. And I hope that they followed the Halloween pattern, where if you don't open the skin out of a loot box, you can buy it for 2,000 credits, because that seemed like it worked out, and everybody was super happy with it with the Halloween event.
How many credits was it?
I think it was 3,000. It was three times the normal cost. Right.
I'm not off my rocker. Good.
Regardless, I hope they follow that format and with the Christmas event. And I hope that we see a Christmas brawl. They don't really do the brawls, but I think that would be interesting. And I don't think they've come out with a new brawl in a while, right?
Have they? And it would just make sense, right? Like, yeah. They had one for the Halloween event, as well as obviously the Summer Games event. Now, obviously, the feature set has changed since then somewhat, but mm-hmm. I think it just makes sense that there would be like the seasonal or like weekly content has been such a huge draw for Blizzard across all of the franchises. I can't imagine that they don't have something planned for their like Christmas/Wintervale/Santa/whatever event. Like, that's definitely where they're headed. And I'm really, really excited. Like, I'm looking forward to whatever it is, right? Like, I don't care what it is or how it plays. I just think it'll be a lot of fun, especially since it's likely to take place on like a Christmas themed map with characters that are getting Christmas skins. Like, it's just gonna be a lot of fun, and I'm really stoked.
Yep. It's gonna be fun. any other particular skins you guys are hoping to see?
Lucio, he could, I don't know what he could be doing. Something,
yeah, Lucio's similar to the soccer, kind of slacking.
Soccer one. I don't know. He could hold
a figure. He's going to be a figure skater
bag over his, oh yeah. Figure skater could totally work.
That's a good point.
That could be one.
You're welcome. I think that there's a lot of great ones. I still want Soldier 76 and like ugly Christmas dad sweater.
Oh my goodness.
I really want that. I think Mercy, Mrs. Claus. Some people want May is Christmas year round, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
She seems like a really obvious candidate to get something, though. Like winter themed, I feel like she really deserves it. And there's a lot of them that are also super easy, right? Like, it's nothing to make like a Bastion skin where he's got some like Christmas ornaments hanging off of him or whatever. Like, there's definitely some that are easier than others.
Make him a present. So when he goes into sentry mode, He's like a perfect president that just shoots at you.
Locks himself up like a Wally. Yeah. Just yeah, shoots snowballs or something. Yeah. Yeah, that would be perfect. I gotta say, like, if there's a gimmick one, I really hope they've made like a super gimmicky Reaper skin. Like, I hope that he's neon red and green and like just ostentatious, because that would make my life.
Yeah. That speaks to Reaper players.
Yeah.
I know exactly, right?
Yeah, there's so many cool ones. I'm really excited for this. Katie has like 7,000 credits saved up. I've got about 4,000, so we'll be getting a couple. And then, you know me, I can't stay away from the games that let me buy things to make me look better than other people. We spent a lot of money. Kevin, how much money do we spend on Hearthstone? How much?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and there's one more.
Really quickly about the holiday event. I thought it was very interesting how they were promoting it on Twitter and Facebook. I might be reading a little too much into this, but they were asking people to retweet it to RSVP. And I'm wondering if that means they'll send something out to those people who did that. Maybe.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
I saw that.
Jimmy Thomas here.
I didn't think that they would go that far.
I didn't think they would either, but I was just like, maybe?
Yeah, but I followed the same line of thought that Jimmy did. When I saw it, I was like, are they hinting that we should retweet it to RSVP? Or are they just trying to follow the etiquette of an invitation to an event?
Yeah.
I mean, they have done stuff like that before, right? They've given away like hero skins to people who retweeted like news and stuff. Like, it's definitely a thing that's happened. So
I'm going to make sure I retweet this right now. So
we gotta hold the fort down.
Yeah, hold on. Settle down here.
It crawls to a halt.
Oh my God.
I can call attention to one more thing while John is busy.
Can I, on the thing, one more time? We do have Jimmy Domus on the show. And whenever it comes to speculation, I'm calling him Jimmy Domus because he gets everything freaking right.
That's why I'm going to retweet this,
by the way. Yeah. All right. Sorry, Kev, go ahead and talk to us about loot boxes in China.
Yeah. So this is, I thought, really interesting. A law has been proposed that's looking very likely to pass in China. Translation of it was supplied on the NeoGAF forums. And they're basically saying that any game that's going to be legally published or playable online in China will have to have publicly accessible data explaining the frequency with which drop rates and randomization are structured, as well as the actual outcomes of those things within 90 days for any kind of loot box or like digital in-game purchases that have randomization or variance to them. And I guess this is something where they think that there's, you know, I don't even want to call it like consumer protection, but I think there might just be some like sense that this is a way that they can get people to feel like the publishers are legitimate. And there are probably, I don't want to like go there, but there are probably companies who have abused this type of system in the past. I don't think like a Blizzard or a company of that size or scale would do it, but there's certainly an argument to be made that someone could. So it's definitely interesting. It won't affect this, but apparently as early as May of next year, this law could kick into effect. And then we as players outside of China could stand to benefit, because the drop rates on loot boxes in Overwatch or packs in Hearthstone or anything that are being bought in China, which frankly has the largest sample size of any gaming demographic on Earth, would actually be available to everybody to see. So I just thought that was interesting, because we are going into another loot box driven event, and I would be curious to actually see those kinds of numbers.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's. Oh, love this show sometimes. Oh, you know, have you ever been in a conversation with a group of people who just won't shut up and they never say anything? Like they're always talking, but they never say anything.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Jimmy. All right. illustrating perfectly my point, this podcast is not one of them. And I actually absolutely love it for that fact, is that if I don't have anything to add, I'm not going to add anything. anything.
We're done.
I'm not going to BS my way through this topic. We're just going to move on. And we do need to move on because there's been a lot of changes and mix-ups and results going on in the world of Overwatch esports. So check this out. First, we've got a huge three-way trade between Misfits, Rogue, and Luminosity Gaming. This is kind of one of, if not the biggest transaction, not signing, but transaction that we've seen in competitive Overwatch so far. So here's what we've seen. Misfits signed Tvik and Reinforced from Rogue, and Manitin and Zave from Luminosity. So Misfits add four new people, and Rogue acquire Soon and Skipjack from Misfits, and then Luminosity Gaming signs Crew and Hidan from Misfits. Now, before we jump into our amazing reactions, check out this Misfits roster first. Nevix, who's their flex support, Zebesai, who's their flex, Tvik, DPS, Reinforced Tank, Zave support, and Manitin support. The big thing, Rosh, remind me, I want to talk to you about later, about Nevix not being on DPS, despite how amazing he's been on DPS, especially when you okay, great. Glad we're on the same page there.
Yeah.
Rogue's roster is AKM as DPS, Wins as a flex, Unko as flex support, Nox as support, Soon as DPS, Skipjack as tank, and that'll do it there. So again, Soon and Skipjack, amazing, amazing signs. And then Luminosity Gaming, Spree on flex, Mineral on support, Icefelt as DPS, Superpluke as tank, and then of course Hidan as flex support, and Crew as DPS. So looking at the statements from the teams, the big things to take away here, things that they said, is that we're really happy that this is a favorable three-way trade for everybody. There's no talk anywhere yet that any money changed hands, and it was just a three-way trade in which people just walked away saying, hey, we're really happy with the players that we're getting, number one. Number two, they talked about the localization of the languages as to being a huge strength to the Overwatch team. So let's stop there for a second and just talk about this, because this is a big deal. Jimmy, what is the advantage? And Rosh, I want you to chime in too. Probably Kevin, because, you know, Kevin's always got thoughts. what are your all thoughts on... bye, Kev. See you, Kev. Bye, Kevin. Thanks, Kev. Bye, Kev. What are your thoughts on teams that are going for languages spoken as a means and justification for trade, especially considering Overwatch League coming out, which is regionally based?
Yeah, it's really big, and the importance should be relatively obvious on the face of it. Being able to speak the same language between all your teammates and never have to second guess, oh, is this person going to understand this English word in the heat of the battle or whatever, just because it might not be their first language. So just being on the same page as regards to language is so huge. And as fast as a game as Overwatch is, being able to communicate quickly as possible what is going on in the game and making calls for plays is going to be key for these teams. And we've seen this in other games as well, like most notably MOBAs. A lot of changes have been made because of this reason and the difficulty in communicating between teammates. So it's not a surprise that we're seeing this more in Overwatch as we get further and further into how the esports scene is going to pan out.
I think it's huge because if you watch any Overwatch streamers, just in solo queue, a lot of like Mendo, he'll play on Korean servers because it's just massively different than West Coast servers. And even he learns, you know, Korean catchphrases so that he knows positioning and calls in the game. That's how big communication is. How many times have we talked about, oh, should they disable or enable voice chat for people who just enter the game, and that we aren't for that or we are for it? It just, communication is huge with Overwatch, and it's super vital to the game. So what essentially happened is Rogue, with the changes that they mainly moved to a French-speaking team, while Misfits moved to a fully Swedish lineup. And if pros at that caliber of player doing that, then I think that that's all you need as proof to show that communication is that vital. Because I think it was Rogue, they made some really weird changes because of communication, trading team leaders, training their hit scans for a double hit scan team versus one hit scan and a flex player. It's just, they're putting communication at the top of their list. And I think that that's proof enough that it really, really seems to matter.
Kev, bring us home. What are your last thoughts?
I mean, you guys have hit a lot of the big stuff, right? I think the language barrier is obviously a factor. I think that there's probably some residency requirement stuff, because even though there's probably a lot more freedom of mobility among the European countries, I don't know the specifics, but I assume that it's not quite as bad maybe as it would be for example, a North American player playing in Europe or vice versa. But in general, it probably solves a lot of potential visa issues. It probably solves a lot of like living situation issues, because now all these players are back in their, you know, countries of origin, all that kind of stuff. Like, it works out really well that way. I had also heard, and I don't want to get into like the gossip, but I had heard that there had been some like player personality clashes on these teams as well. So it wouldn't shock me if maybe that was a factor.
you brought up a good point, right? So as I'm going to call someone out, because I'm positive they don't listen to the show. Crew is somebody who has been with 5 teams in Overwatch since its beginning. And the last 3, I had my notes, but they started Graviton Surge, I believe, mm-hmm. with Soon, and it ended because Rogue kind of picked up a roster, and it kind of everything else that they were doing. And then he was with Misfits, and
there's someone like this in every esport. It happens.
They removed him. So they removed him from the starting roster, but he was still signed, but they didn't have really intention to play him recently. This was probably like 3 to 4 weeks ago. And now he's on Luminosity Gaming as a DPS. So there was, I mean, synergy is super important, and something that South Korea taught us at the Overwatch World Cup is sometimes a team that plays like a team is way more important when it comes to winning Overwatch games than being the best and most talented individual players. So
I think that's absolutely something that probably played into this a little bit. When you look, I mean, all across the top end of Overwatch teams right now, as they sort of start to like do these roster shuffles and hopefully stabilize a little bit, especially moving into Overwatch League, where I assume trading restrictions and lineup changes will hopefully be in place such that there's maybe not quite so much movement. It's something that every esport struggles with. Every esport tries and finds different ways to solve. But every team in the top end, like, I mean, look at Envious dumps their roster, picks up IDDQD, or, you know, C9 had kind of a revolving door of people for a while there. And now, like, all of these teams, Rogue, Misfits, you know, Luminosity to a lesser extent, but even, I mean, Envious, Reunited, take your pick of any top 10 Overwatch team, they've all seen significant roster shuffles since the game started being played at a competitive level in the end of beta. And I'm not surprised that this is now maybe like the last step in sort of formalizing some team structure before, you know, major buyout transactions or the beginning of the league in the new year. Like, this was kind of hopefully the inevitability. I hope that there was some really good, you know, like up and coming players who have established teams or started to look at physical jurisdictions where they'll have that opportunity in the new year as well. But It's something I hope we see less of. I'm not going to lie. I hope we see a lot less of this kind of movement in the new year.
Well, I mean, we keep talking about Overwatch being a brand new game. It's still so new. It hasn't even been out for a year, and it's one game of the year, and all of this amazing news has come out, and we're super excited because they've been so proactive about releasing new stuff. But I think that we keep forgetting that it's still so new. Its E-League presence and its esports presence is still so new that, I mean, these changes are kind of expected, are they not? I mean, teams were basically formed in beta. So if you didn't get into beta, you really didn't have a way of getting scouted for these teams. And so after beta came out and these teams were formed, they were playing together and there were personality clashes and play style clashes and meta changes. And it kind of, that people wanted to reform the teams, and then they did Apex, and throughout the whole season, you got to see how the team performed and everything meshed well. And now I think I agree with Kevin that this will be the last major, huge shuffle around of teams like we just saw between Misfits, Luminosity, and Rogue. I think things will settle down, especially with E-League and buyouts with all of these big companies that we've been seeing with Overwatch. But I think that it was expected that all of this would be shuffled around.
Right. But I mean, that's something that Blizzard will want to clamp down on in the new year for the league.
Yeah,
they're going to want people to be able to follow teams, buy merch, feel like they can follow players and, you know, observe storylines. That's a huge core thing for them in their esports push going into next year, is having these player driven storylines. You can't have that when the players all disband and reform new teams with totally different people every 3 months before every major tournament cycle, which is, I mean,
yeah,
we've seen Heroes go through that. Like, it's not a good way to establish a following, and that's what they really need.
Yep. And I feel like that's what Blizzard is doing with the Overwatch League and even the Heroes League next year, is doing the more traditional sports model of competitive gaming here, where the teams, they're locked in. Basically, you sign that contract for a year or whatever, and if you want out, you have to get your team to trade you, essentially, per whatever the rules are. So, I mean, we've heard in traditional sports all the time, players are like, oh, I don't like playing for this team, but they continue to go out there and play still because they're under contract. And so we might see some of that kind of become a part of esports here with the Overwatch League, I think.
Yeah.
Tend to agree. Yep.
I can't wait, guys. I have three Overwatch League t-shirts,
so,
and they're all the same exact one, just so I can wear them day after day after day without smelling.
I couldn't get one in my size. I'm so sad.
Yeah, they don't make one in a women's extra small.
Oh.
I don't know. Let's talk about Overwatch Apex Season 1. It was a joke. It was a joke, okay? Sometimes we gotta lighten up on this show. We get too serious too quick. Kevin cries when he doesn't win. It's awkward for everybody.
It's bad.
So Overwatch Apex Season 1 has concluded. We've talked about this the last 2-3 weeks in passing, saying this is going on. Watch it. Well, it's done. Now, and a big congratulations to Team Envious. Taking it all 3-2-2 over Afrika Freaks Blue. So, hey. Woo! Good job. Congratulations. Now, this is a big deal. Let's talk about Envious' road to the championship for a second. So, first, mid-tournament, Envious loses Tailspin. They pick up a guy from Thailand named Mickey. So Tailspin leaves mid-tournament, and basically, you know, the same thing that we keep hearing over and over is, you know, we just weren't working as a team. It didn't feel like it was a team thing. And I wasn't happy playing there, or the team wasn't happy playing with me. Whatever that is, you know, that whole synergy piece wasn't there. So they temporarily pick up Mickey from Thailand. We're going to talk about Mickey in a moment. But then how Apex worked is it allowed the top four teams, kind of, well, top three teams, to pick their opponents. So based on, they used a point system. So the more you won, the more points you got. And Rogue had the opportunity to pick, I believe, second. And Rogue picked Envious, which is a huge, huge freaking surprise and a very bold move. Kev.
I don't know that it is a surprise. And I'm just going to go ahead and say that this is not uncommon in other esports that have done this in the past, right? Where the winner of a group has the ability to pick their opponent. You used to see this all the time in like the MSLs and OSLs and StarCraft and stuff. And it was basically, like you were just slamming it on the table and being like, no, we're the best. And you would pick an opponent who was very good. Like, you don't want an easy bracket. You would say, if I'm going to have to face this person in the final, I may as well face them at the beginning. Or yeah. You would just say, you're good, but it doesn't matter. We're going to beat you anyway. And you would pick the toughest person out of the lineup and resolve that early. Deal with it before they get in their groove, before they get warmed up. It's actually, a fairly common strategy. And Rogue, interestingly enough, probably felt really good about it, given that they had a flawless record. And yeah. of the teams that made it through, Envious actually one of the second worst record of the teams that made it out of the group stage. Right. So on paper, maybe they just looked at it and said, you know what? We respect them, but we're going to beat them. We've beaten them before. They didn't do well here. Let's just take them out early and get it over with.
Yep. So. Sorry, I said surprise and made Kevin go a rabbit on me for a moment.
Rabbit!
It's all right. It's that extra small women's t-shirt. It gets really tight sometimes. And anyways, but I mean, you're right. It was a very strategic move. It's a move that they wouldn't have made before the season began. But after they saw that Envious was kind of middling at best, now they have a new player in Mickey who you don't know how they're going to do. But more importantly, we just talked about synergy is incredibly important over individual skill in Overwatch. So it was something where people went, holy crap, they're going for him. They're going for Runaway. And I can't remember who it was from Rogue. But the question kind of was, you know, what are your thoughts playing one of the best teams in Overwatch? And he's like, well, they're the best in NA. And, you know, that was kind of it. And Taimu literally goes, they're right. We are the best in NA. We haven't played incredibly well recently. We do have a new person on the roster. He totally owned up for it. Which, if you look at Tailspin's comments about Taimu, I think that's where a lot of the friction happened.
Yeah. Might have been,
yeah. So, anyways, they picked Envious, and Envious beat them 3-2. Which again, nobody really expected that. I don't know if they expected a 3-0, but I definitely don't think people expected a 3-2. In favor of Envious.
Yeah, I agree. Well,
and you got to look, too, like, over the course of that series, like, Rogue takes the early lead on Ilios, straight up tie on King's Row, which doesn't happen a lot. Li Zhang goes to Envious, Hanamura another tie. They play Li Zhang again. This time it goes to Rogue. And now it's like, okay, Rogue is one game away from winning. They then proceed to lose on Watchpoint Gibraltar and then lose again on Eichenwald. Like, It actually looked like Rogue was going to be rewarded strategically for what they did.
They should have been.
Right up until the very end. And those games were close. Yep. Like, it wasn't a blowout. It wasn't like Envious stomped on them. I mean, one player one player has to sneeze mid-match, and it's a totally different series.
Yeah.
Watchpoint, they weren't even able to get to checkpoint A, though. So, I mean, that's a pretty staunch defense by Envy. Yeah,
that's unheard
Envy.
Of. Not getting
especially
to
on Watchpoint. I know it's
point
moved.
A is granted. It's almost like you're always going to get there.
Yeah. Like, impressive play by Envy. It's just that quickly put a new person in their roster and beat one of the best teams
huge.
In
and
Overwatch.
I think, kind of like Totemly said in chat and John kind of touched on it a little bit, is that Rogue sensed Envious and that being their weakness is, hey, let's take Envious now with Mickey before they have a couple more weeks of synergy building with Mickey. So let's just take them out now, hit them where they're weakest, and then we don't have to worry about them for the rest of the series. Obviously, that backfired. It was still a really good match. I can see the strategy from Rogue's point of view and why they did that. I'm happy that Envious was able to come out on top, especially with all of the comments going back, oh, they're top in NA, and, you know, the whole tailspin issues, and, you know, NA like repping NA. So I'm happy it ended where it ended. It was really close, and it could have gone the other way very easily, though.
Right.
Well, and the NA comment to me is hilarious in a game where, like, genre-wise, historically, Korea has not been dominant in shooters, right? Like, if there's ever been a dominant geographical space in shooters, it's probably, like, Russia in old-school Counter-Strike. Like, there's really never been a dominant country, right, nationality, whatever, in professional shooters. USA. And like USA. Nothing
well USA you
but
sorry
Envious shows up like skids past Rogue, right? And you're thinking like, okay, maybe they can do it, maybe they can't. I don't know if anybody else watched that final, but they made Afrika look like it was their first time playing. Like, what a blowout.
I think that's more impressive than the
it is
Rogue.
Absolutely, it is
just like wiping the floor of this
grand
Korean
finals
team that qualified,
right?
I mean, in grand finals, yeah, grand finals.
Oh, I mean you
expect a big thing. We've seen the Korean players mop the floor with everybody at BlizzCon. Like, you just go into that thinking,
yeah,
this is a done deal.
I think everybody thought that. Was did anybody actually think that NA would come out on top and not a Korean team?
Well, as soon as you saw that matchup, as soon as you saw what the final was going to be, it was like, okay,
yeah,
I'm paying out 3-1 odds on Envious because I could stand to make a couple bucks,
yeah,
right? Like,
I
no,
mean,
it got flattened.
Well,
and it was crazy.
So Reunited, I believe, picked Afrika Freaks Blue as their opponent. And I believe that they were the top seed. So that was the first thing that they did. They lost 3-2. And then they played against BK Stars and they beat them 3-1 and they got crushed. It's tough, right? So in the final four, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, so I was right. Half of them were Eastern teams. So I believe they're all South Korean, but I don't want to overspeak my knowledge here. But Reunited, Rogue, Team Envious, sorry, five. There was five. I think Reunited, Rogue, Team Envious. The rest was a Korean team. So math on your side, you know, you would expect kind of South Korea to do great work there. Reunited, again, you know, didn't do great. They were 10 points. They're actually the fourth seed, I believe. They're at the top of the bracket, but they were seed number, well, yeah, anyways, they won their group, which I don't know. This is I've actually looked at the bracket quite a bit and I remember asking the same question, but there's a few things. I want to talk about the last team, Lunatic High versus Kongdu Ansia. So those are two teams who have been widely regarded as some of the best. Now, Lunatic High made up a huge part of the Overwatch World Cup team for South Korea that went ahead and just dominated the whole thing. So Lunatic High, there's a lot of hype behind. And then Kongdu Ansia is actually a newer team. They haven't played a lot of LANs. They haven't played in a lot of different venues. But in scrims, there have been multiple teams. I know Envious was one of them. I can't remember which the other couple were, but they said, we haven't won a game against these guys. These guys are good, and they're not something to sneeze at, despite the fact that you may or may not know who that team is or the players on the team. And Envious had to go through them as well. So they would have had to either go through Lunatic High or Kongdu Ansia, which is not an easy team. Yet you're right, Rogue, that was kind of an upset. People were really surprised to see Rogue. Not that it wasn't a bad, not that it was a bad strategy, but that it was just a surprise in the sense that they looked at the game outside of the game and how they were going to beat them. So what do you think about Kongdu Unsia 3-0-ing Rosh Lunatic High in the semifinals? Before we even get there, I didn't really expect that. All I had heard about Kongdu Unsia was I watched a couple matches where they look fine, but they weren't necessarily playing teams of this caliber. And then Lunatic High, who I felt were some of the best, if not mm-hmm. the best teams in Korea, maybe all of the East, maybe all of yeah. the world.
Looking at the previous games that Lunatic High has played in, I second that opinion. I think that it was the definition of a sleeper game and that Lunatic High just dropped the ball. I think if the same matchup were to come again, Lunatic versus Kongdu, I don't think it would be a similar result. I don't think that Lunatic would drop the game like they did. I think that even with the past comments being said of, oh, you might not know the players, you might not know who the team is, don't yawn on them, don't sneeze on them, don't look past them. They're still here to win it. They're still a great team. But I think that's exactly what happened, and that Lunatic High just dropped the ball. That's my best guess. The series was interesting. I think that it took everybody by surprise that Lunatic High, not just us, I think it took everybody by surprise that they actually dropped that series like that. I think it's almost as betting odds were 3-1 that a Korea team would take the whole championship. I think you could say the same against Lunatic High and Kongdu, that I don't think anybody really would have chose Kongdu as their choice of winning the game. So I think it was a surprise to everybody, which in the end made the series really exciting. You know, when you get to a series and something like that does happen, it's not just a super easy bracket. You don't watch the entire series and you're like, all right, well, I just watched 2-3-0s. I really wish I could have a close game right now. So in the end, I think it worked really well for the Apex series and finale and all mm-hmm. of that. And I think that it made it enjoyable for the fan base to see that. But like I said before, if Lunatic High and Kongdu went up against each other again, I don't think that it would be the same thing. And I think that Lunatic High would definitely come on top the second time.
I think one of the big things that Kongdu Unsia had is they have really strong tank players. And with the changes that went live mid-Apex, right? It's the same reason why you can make an argument that Envious did so well. They picked up a D.Va main who can play Zarya when they need to, but they picked up a D.Va main. And with the new changes, I mean, we've all seen D.Va. We all hate D.Va. We love the fan art of D.Va. We love.
I actually have it in my notes where it says D.Va. It says, I hate D.Va.
How many?
Six? Suck. However many, I just repeated it over and over again. Okay.
Ad nauseum.
Yeah.
And Kongdu Unsia has some very strong tank play on their team. I have to go back and double check, so I don't want to blank it again, but I believe they played a really heavy 2-3 tank team the entire time. And that was something. Go ahead.
What I think is interesting, just something I noticed looking at the maps that were picked, is the Korean team still really like Temple of Anubis. I mean, we saw this at the Overwatch World Cup.
Nobody likes Temple of Anubis.
Korea picked Temple of Anubis against USA and absolutely destroyed them. and that happened a couple times in the games that were Korean teams against each other. In that first series, Kongdu versus Lunatic, and we never saw it again. I'm guessing it's because none of the other teams wanted to play it, because it seems like only Korea likes that map for competitive.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a thing. Maybe Korea is strategizing that to be their map, their sleeper map, that, oh, if they go against any teams, they know that any teams aren't scrimming on Temple of Anubis. So they know if they do this, like at the Overwatch Cup, they're just going to roll the NA team or any other team, because they've practiced this secret pick so much, whereas other teams haven't, that they just come in and you see it like they did with NA in the Overwatch Cup, where they just, they take the first point in 30 seconds and that's a game.
Right.
So maybe that's just a Korean strategy.
Well, this is an issue in the entirety of Overwatch esports right now, right? Is like every tournament is still trying to figure out how they want to solve this problem. And there's been this conversation that's circling even now about like, do we want predetermined maps? Do we want people playing on their best maps, right? And the like pick, ban, map, draft process is just not something that anybody has actually nailed down up to this point. I honestly look at it as an issue that will come to probably define a big part of Overwatch esports, much the same as, you know, map selection has been a big part of, I mean, every MOBA where there's variations in maps, all of the RTS games ever, right? Like what maps you've practiced or rehearsed or play better or worse on statistically is a huge factor. And that's going to be, it's going to continue to be like, teams are going to be better or worse at different game modes and different maps and different metas. And every layer of that is very, very important. I don't think we know enough, even honestly, about the Korean pro scene right now to honestly say either way, right? Like, I think we're just getting glimpses of it as these teams kind of like emerge and show up in competition, because like Lunatic High, we at least had seen play a little bit before. Kongdu, I mean, Kongdu as a company is actually sponsoring a ton of different Overwatch teams. Mm-hmm. They've sponsored a pile of different crews. And we just don't honestly know yet exactly like who's going to emerge as a strong player. There's a lot of esports professionals and coaches in Korea still migrating into Overwatch. Like there's a lot going on down there that we just don't understand yet. So getting these little glimpses right now is really interesting. And the map pick thing especially, I think, is going to be one of their, absolutely, you're right, it's going to be one of their like strategic strengths.
Yep.
I agree.
I think, too, as Overwatch is out longer, the strengths of teams on certain game types is going to kind of squish a little bit. The game is still 7 months, 8 months old from when it went live. And so I think that that will change. But it definitely, Apex was an amazing amazing event. There were tons of amazing matches. Great teams overall. The mid tournament patch was kind of weird, and it definitely allowed some teams to take advantage of a situation that they otherwise may not have been able to do. And so overall, I've been really happy with Apex Season 1 as maybe the best non-Blizzard Overwatch tournament I've ever seen. And
yeah, I agree. And one thing, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. With what Kevin was saying earlier about the map drafts, and there are tournaments coming up that they're trying to shy away from that. MLG Vegas is coming up, I believe it's next week, and they're actually not allowing a map draft for teams. And teams have been incredibly vocal about how unsatisfied they are with this, because if you actually look at the map count for what MLG Vegas is making the teams play, Ilios has played 9 times. And if you've watched any tournaments in the past, Ilios is one of the maps that gets the fewest played time in said tournaments. So teams just don't scrim this. I think in the future, tournaments might be a combination of map draft, but only being able to draft certain maps so many times and ban out so many maps so many times, because I think that Blizzard and tournaments were getting kind of stale with the maps that were being shown and competed with. So I think that MLG Vegas is trying to take a step towards, and Blizzard is trying to take a step towards, the other maps getting gameplay and the other maps being introduced to the circuit of tournament play, which is why they're doing this. I don't agree with them necessarily outright banning the map ban portion, because so many tournaments have been played that way up to this. So a lot of teams are going to be left out to dry because they haven't focused on these maps. But I think that that's something that does need to change in the future of esports with Overwatch teams, that they need to spend more time working on the maps.
Does this seem a little bit reminiscent of Blizzard and ESL running tournaments early on Overwatch and not forcing the one hero limit and teams basically begging them to
fix that?
And
I
then
forgot about that.
Changing that, but yeah, I know that was really early in.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, this is surprising. This is actually like really breaking news right now, because Flasher put out this tweet 3 minutes ago. So
Well, there's lots of this that's been going on for a long time. I don't know. I hesitate to like understand Blizzard's motivation there, because I'm sure that they have like internal goals around making sure that like teams are fully competent on all the maps and that they're not just hyper specialized down to a handful, because you could technically game a like pick ban draft process to a point where you could just choose three maps that you never have to learn, right? Just choose the maps where your comp doesn't work, or your playstyle doesn't work, or your player doesn't like French people, so you don't want to play on maps based in France, or whatever. Like, whatever it ends up being, right? But like, I totally understand why they don't want that to be viable. But at the same time, like, you don't get the best caliber of gameplay unless you let teams play on the maps that they've been working on strategies for. If they come up with a clever way, like the everybody watched that highlight reel clip of the May ice wall lift pushing on Anubis into point A, right? Oh, like, everybody's seen that. That was crazy. That was a really awesome, very clever strategy that emerged and became something that people were like, oh, I didn't even realize that would work. Now we're all doing that. Like, that's emergent gameplay is a huge part of how definitive strategies become definitive in esports. Like, that's a thing that has to exist. And you have to let the players pick maps for that to be an option. Like, that's, I'm pretty sure that's the genesis of most of the top tier play on any map in any game ever.
Yep. We need to move on. We talked about Apex a lot, but I think we hit a lot of really important topics when it comes to competitive Overwatch and the evolution of it going forward. Is it about map bans? Is it about being well-rounded? Should the map you play on determine tournaments? I think those are all great conversations to have for a different week, Kevin. Just kidding. All right, so
I want to talk about it now.
I want a goose that lays a golden egg, I want it now. Anyways, let's talk about some more things we've got going on. First of all, I'm going to leave with this. I'm not even going to let you guys comment on this, but congratulations to Mickey filling in so well for Envious. They did great. You could tell that him and Taimu especially had some great synergies as Reinhardt and D.Va, arguably what toppled them over Rogue in the first of many difficult and hard-fought series. And congratulations again to Envious for a tremendous win. But we've got more. So we do have Overwatch MGA 2016 championships going off now, and Well, Apex did great, and I didn't notice any tech issues, and Doa and Monty were great. Not so much with this one here. So the MGA 2016 championships are with, I believe, MSI, and they include Fnatic, Rise Nation, Ninjas in Pajamas, also known as NIP. So if you ever hear us say NIP, that's what we mean. And Kongdu Panthera. Panthera, it depends on how you say it. Anyways, pretty big names overall in Overwatch. Some teams that were really excited to see play on the big stage. Well, we haven't really gotten to do that. They've had tons of issues so far. And on our podcast, whether it's Well Met, Kevin, when we talk about Hearthstone, or this one, we don't like to speculate and put down and be negative, because we like to be positive, lift up. You know, Kevin, you look great in that extra small women's t-shirt. All that stuff. Like, we think, you know, it's we like to be positive here, but there has been some pretty incredible issues for a tournament of this caliber. Basically, what happened is initially there were laptops brought in who the players kind of refused to play on because they're only getting 90 frames per second. The tournament ended up being delayed till today. And then today, quote unquote, internet connectivity issues. So we'll let you know next week what ends up happening with the MGA 2016 championships, but I don't believe it's been finished. Am I right in that, Rush? Am I right?
Weird. Yeah, it hasn't been finished. They did one game today, which is what they said that they were going to push it off to until today, but then they were having internet issues today. And it's really funny because I was reading the Reddit Overwatch thread on this, and the top tip, the most upvoted, was the real key to surviving the MGA 2016 Overwatch tournament is checking the drivers on your in-house computers more than 5 minutes before your tournament starts. And I think that is all you need to know to explain the MGA 26 tournament is that that didn't happen.
Get out of here. You got wrecked. Sorry. I got really excited. I never get to use my whip sound,
yeah.
But I got to use my whip sound on that one. So stay tuned on that. We've also got Team Story Chapter 1. It's a $100,000 Chinese tournament that is just starting up, still going on. Make sure to check that out. I want to tell you exactly where it is, but I forgot. So yeah, Google it. You guys are smart. Google it. We don't have dumb listeners who listen to the show. We only have smart listeners. So you guys will figure it out. Team Story Chapter 1. Also, we have IEM. Sorry, Crackion.
I want to see how you try to pronounce this.
Yeah, please.
So, Crackion says in chat, you can use that whip sound on me, Kick Tripod.
Oh, please.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
Anyways, the Invitational announces $100,000 is going to be for next weekend as well. IEM Rienji.
I think it's Gyeonggi.
Nope. Nope.
I think it's Gyeonggi too. I think it's Gyeonggi too because when I was reading
I'm joking. By the way, nobody reading that normal who doesn't know another language would say that. But anyways, it's going to be happening next weekend as well, including Afrika Freaks Blue, Lunatic High, Kongdu Panthera, Luxury Watch Red, Misfits, and Rogue. So again, another tournament with lots of big teams. I'm actually really looking forward to this one.
I think Misfits comes on top. I'm looking forward to it because of all the changes that we were just talking about at the beginning of the podcast. I think it'll be really fun to see.
I think Rogue might do some pretty amazing things as well. And of course, we've got MLG Vegas next weekend as well. So you will definitely get your Overwatch fix in this next week. Any other thoughts on the upcoming tournaments going on? Oh, yeah, I wanted to say something. So Luxury Watch Red, we talked about this on the payload. It might have been before Rosh even. Do you guys remember that crazy Widowmaker montage that we saw early on by a player named Pine? Well, anyways, I do. I was really excited. Pine plays for Luxury Watch Red. So I'm really excited. He's had some amazing Widowmaker play. He placed the top 100 in the world, and his second most played character is Widowmaker. I know there's a lot of people too on Reddit, in Twitch chat, who are really excited to see Pine as well. So lots of good stuff. Anything else on these tournaments and esports stuff we've been talking about this week? We feel good?
Chungi.
What did you just call me?
That's what I thought.
That's rude. Rude. So are you going to elaborate on that, or are you just going to...
That was the pronunciation. Chungi.
Chungi. Oh, I thought you were talking... like, is that a player on a team, or... Oh, God.
I've been holding on to that. That's all I got.
Okay, cool. All right. We got one more thing for you this week. You know what? We're going to go a little long. Normally, I'm the guy who says, nope, shut up. We're cutting it short. And we're going to make sure we finish on time. Forget it. Let's go long.
Faster than sight. So predictable.
Put that on.
Ready for battle.
Yes! So this week, we did want to talk a little bit of strategy with you all. And in light of all the changes and the things going on in the competitive meta, the non-competitive meta, we've noticed a lot of people on Twitter, via email, via Twitch ask us the same thing. And it has to do with the new three tank comps that we are seeing in Overwatch going on. So we're seeing a lot of, you know, Reinhardt, D.Va, and insert third tank here, typically Zarya, sometimes Roadhog, sometimes the other way around, whatever. Three tanks is what we're seeing and how to deal with them. So we wanted to take a little bit of time and talk through that. So with this new three tank meta, we really wanted to break down what's going on here and kind of how you can deal with it, how you can be a better team player when it comes to teams who you look over and all of a sudden you see a Reinhardt, D.Va, and a Roadhog, and here you are as little Lucio going, well, fudge.
Play another tank.
Play another tank.
It's not even like, oh, you go into the middle and, oh, they have three tanks, so what do I do now? No, it's just that you expect it to happen because it does happen. This is the stalest, most shallow meta that Overwatch has come out with, and I am very opinionated on three tanks and how it needs to change, and Ana needs to be freaking nerfed, and oh, I have so many thoughts on this section. I cannot wait to hear you guys' opinions.
I'm afraid now. I'm afraid to say anything
You have released the Kraken, sir. Oh.
I did. Okay, so I did my placements finally yesterday. Well, I started to, and then I got three matches in, and I was like, okay, I'm not doing this. If I get chased by D.Va for one more minute, I'm uninstalling this game. So I'm very, very opinionated on the state of Overwatch right now. Basically, if you guys haven't been playing ranked right now, the meta seems to be Reinhardt, Roadhog, D.Va, Lucio, Ana, and Soldier, which you can swap it out for McCree, but Soldier is the A1 comp. And that's basically what to expect when you go into ranked. The only way, in my opinion, to really counter the opposing team is to just play your character better than the enemy team's character. Right now, it doesn't seem like there are a lot of counters to the tank meta. It's a very, very simple meta, and I'm not a fan of it.
So definitely at the high end, you're right. It's it's like mirror comping that, yeah, and hoping that you are better than they are. Now, we're not all on the master, grandmaster train when it comes down to playing Overwatch. So you're playing a game, you're, what, let's just say like 2300, kind of middle of the road-ish player, 50 percentile. You roll up against three tanks and you're like, well, what do I do? What can we do that besides trying to pray? Or of course, again, mirror and hope that you're better. One of the first, Kevin, let's toss this to you. Do you think that there's some characters that do better than others in a tank busting meta?
I mean, I think there have to be, right? Like, obviously there are challenges right now because three tank is so prevalent, and because for better or for worse, the tank toolkits also include a lot of the like damage reduction and ally supporting mechanics in the game. That creates kind of a weird like positive feedback loop where if you run enough tanks, they actually create like an impenetrable series of defenses across, you know, a Reinhardt into a Winston into a Zarya, or you've got like a Zarya supporting a Roadhog behind a Reinhardt or whatever. Like, there's kind of this weird positive feedback cycle where you can basically keep that going indefinitely. But there are still characters that do better than others at, you know, chipping away at that. There's still a lot of value in using Reaper. There's still a lot of value in, you know, trying to use positional advantages because some of those characters are heavily immobile and you can punish them with characters that have more mobility, like a Pharah, like being able to knock them away using a Lucio.
Yeah, D.Va is the only one who can move, right? Like, everyone else are like, boom, boom. Boom, boom.
Yeah, none of them have verticality. Yeah. None of them have speed. Like, Reinhardt can charge, but that's really the extent of it. So you have a lot of ability to punish their zoning potential by utilizing your own mobility and verticality. That said, the problem right now is that with what you have available to you for like flanking routes, lines of sight, there's not a lot of ways to actually do that. And chip damage just isn't effective. Like you can't just sit back on a soldier and slowly whittle your way through a tank and their defenses. Like it's never going to work. So there's probably an argument to be made that the game needs more ways to punish characters who are grouped up. And there's also probably some value in like reviewing why, because in addition to the fact that the three tank meta allows those characters to support each other, there's also a lot of really painful alt synergy there, right? Like people who are bringing Zarya into that mix are bringing Zarya, yes, because she does a lot of damage and yes, because of barriers, but they're also bringing her because there's a lot of value in coordinated play from her ult. And people who are listening to this and playing in silver are going, three tank meta, what's a three tank meta? Because there's no coordinated gravity bombs being dropped, right? Like that's not where this applies, but it's definitely something where like I do actually hope that the game balance shifts in some way to allow for like some kind of chip damage or something that actually forces tank players to reconsider just standing out in the open forever, right?
It's like called nerfing Ana.
Well, I mean, you can nerf Ana, but I mean, you can also do a lot of work to like, they did so much to try to change global alt charging and balance things that way. But I would love to see them go back and say, okay, how do we punish tanks? And what used to punish tanks, right? The things that used to punish tanks were things like a very, very powerful Discord from a Zenyatta, right? Before that got nerfed. It used to be that you could punish tanks with, and I'm trying to think here what else was really good, like post-fix pre-nerf McCree. Did a lot of damage and really did punish you for trying to run characters who couldn't engage him effectively. So you had to see, you saw a shift back towards like double support and more backline because you couldn't afford to spend that much time closing the gap on a good McCree. I don't know. Like, I think there's definitely going to have to be some shift there because otherwise, bar for introducing a new character who explicitly deals like, I don't know, if you introduced a character who had a specialty skill shot that like removed a percentage of a target's health, right? That would be a huge anti-tank, anti-warrior, whatever type mechanic. But as it stands, like there's just nothing that chips through their health pool faster.
You kind of already have that with the Ana debuff for her heal debuff, though. It doesn't necessarily chip away their health, but I'm not a huge fan of the heal debuff in an FPS. I don't like that concept, but I think with Ana and her amazing HPS already, that the heal debuff is too much. But I will say there are some ways that you can use a Zenyatta and Tracer. Zenyatta and Tracer are really good for combating the triple tank right now. Tracer can go back. She can eat through a lot of the tanks. She can also mess with the supports that are in the back, especially against an Ana. You get heal debuffed, you can just blink out. Tracer's pretty good now. Zenyatta is also another good because of his Discord. So there's an argument made there that maybe they should tweak his Discord a tiny, tiny bit. That might chip away with the tanks, give it like a 1% boost, debuff or take nerf Ana in a little bit of way that it doesn't buff the tank meta, and you might be able to switch up the meta a little more. I just think it's teeny tiny little tweaks that they could make that would resolve the issue of the meta being as stale as it is, because I don't know if you guys remember, but back when Overwatch first came out and I first came onto the payload, we were talking about watching esports and how the metas and the comps would be constantly changing, because the point of Overwatch was to counter the other team. They wanted you to change characters. They wanted you to switch your comp. They wanted that part of the strategy to be in the Overwatch game. And I think that this is the furthest that they have ever been from that base of what they wanted Overwatch to be. So I think between all of the pros, all of the players, even people who are just playing quick play, I think that Blizzard will hear the criticism. And I really, really hope if anybody from Blizzard is listening to this, that you guys can act fast on this, because I think that this is the unhappiest anybody's really been with the meta.
Interesting.
Do you think it has to be changed, or that people haven't adjusted quick enough to this meta?
I think that people adjusted pretty fast, though.
Okay, so
or figured out strategies or whatever. But yeah, go ahead, John.
So, I mean, and again, right, at the top level competitive Rosh meta, I think you are right. I think that we are seeing kind of the same thing over and over. And again, we know Overwatch is broken when we're seeing a lot of mirror matches, right? Because that means that counters are no longer as effective as playing the same heroes better, right? It means that people have found a way to play the same heroes better than the other team, and play the same heroes is the best counter to the same heroes.
Mm-hmm.
At lower rankings, and I would say even up to Platinum and Diamond, there are some moves that you can make. And Rosh and Kevin, I believe you both saved this one. Zenyatta is one. The Discord orb can be really powerful when it comes to dealing with a team that is running three tanks, but isn't at the top level of that. If you can, so my brother and I, we often run Zenyatta and Soldier together just for that reason. He tells me who's going to Discord, and then I rip him a new one. And like I said, I'm about 100 points away from Diamond right now, which is not awful. I will say I'm not awful. So I hear you and say that's it. Tracer is another one. Tanks are slow. Tanks are slow, and you only can protect yourself from one way. If you got people shooting from one way and a Tracer or a Genji behind you ripping you, that's really freaking annoying to deal with and can be tough for less coordinated players. Are there any certain ultimates that really do well against kind of multiple tanks?
I think May's ult seems to do pretty well, especially if you have a soldier on your team, because he can burst down the tanks really, really efficiently and fast. So I think that May ult is really, really good for triple tank.
Would you say, for me, something I noticed is that Reinhardt can be really effective as long as you don't have another Reinhardt shield to block that. Because it, in the end, it's kind of like May in a lot of ways, where you just have three tanks laying on the ground for a couple of seconds. Any other ones?
I mean, I think it's some of that is also like map and comp dependent, but I think there's definitely an argument to be made that like a Winston ult can be very, very powerful against triple tank, just because it's very difficult for them to answer a Winston ult. Like, you just don't have, if you're running triple tank, you're not running a lot of like damage and crowd control of your own. And once Winston ults, it's very hard to sort of like control a point or pin him down. There's also probably Well, I mean, and that's one of the challenges, right, is that, like, we talked earlier about tanks not having enough mobility. Winston has the mobility, but there's a lot of trade-offs that come with it, right? Trade-offs like a fairly weak engage, trade-offs like not being as good at defending your team because your defensive utility doesn't move with you. There's drawbacks. There's definitely drawbacks. But he can do okay. If you were going to run like a tank buster comp that ran like a Winston to jump in and separate the opposing team, and like a Reaper to go in and flank and clean up a tank, you know, you could run Lucio to provide a shield, keep everybody alive while they're doing that. It's tough, right? Because really, you're running through a lot of edge cases. And like, I just described a scenario where you need two people to ult simultaneously and a third to catch somebody alone in order to successfully disrupt a three tank meta. Like, there's really nothing that's great, unfortunately. It'd be awesome if, you know, there were value to like Soldier's ult is pretty good against tanks, but it's still really not enough, because it's so
long as D.Va doesn't have that stupid matrix up and starts dancing.
And that's the thing, is like the tanks are so good at countering it. Like, D.Va counters it. Reinhardt counters it.
Show. I'm going to end the show.
Tell
right
us
now.
How you really
we're
feel.
We're going to be done.
The payload
we're just,
is production.
We're just
of
done.
Lizpo.
It's just. Oh, sorry. Okay. Anyways, yeah. You're right. Right. So, I mean, okay. There are ways that you can deal with this. I feel like the biggest weakness in a three-take meta ends up being mobility for the most part. Like, I feel like that's one of the biggest things that if you can get people on two, three, four sides of the opposing team and they're running three tanks, you can rip that pretty quick. But that's not easy to do, especially on maps like payload maps, where there's beginning and end, and the defense spawns on the end side and you spawn on the beginning side. It's a lot more difficult than, say, on a control map where you can easily go through a room, go around, and all of a sudden you're flanking behind. Are there any other obvious weakness with three tanks that we're not thinking about?
I mean,
I don't think so.
It's pretty support dependent, right? Like, three tank also generally means that you are running, in most cases, if not double support, then certainly strong single support and a character that can add support value, like a soldier, right? Where you have the ability to add some healing and stuff. Exactly. Yeah. So the punish in theory is just beating them on damage, right? If you could find a way to build a comp that could push damage at a speed that they couldn't answer, you'd be in really good shape. The reality of that situation is it's very difficult. Like, what does damage fast enough to shred a tank other than like Bastion, which is not an open option? Like, there needs to be better ways to punish teams for running multiple warriors, right? And that's right now, that's the struggle is that unless you get like the world's most talented Reaper backed by somebody can keep them alive definitely, you're in a lot of trouble. Like, I would actually love to see some more like almost like a friendly Roadhog hook, right? Like an ability you could use to pull an ally out of danger, because you could really get aggressive with Reaper then. And there's, when things go badly, kind of life grip Reaper out, right? That would be a really cool way to sort of say, okay, now we can introduce a punish where somebody can dive a tank and go all in and not be punished for their lack of escapes or mobility issues. Like, that's a long-term design implication for something that would help people dive on multiple tanks. But now, like, short term, there's just got to be better damage solutions. And I won't be shocked if they decide that how they want to answer this is they want to do something like increase total damage if all the shots from Reaper hit a single target, or something minor that way that helps. But in the short term, I mean, the big weaknesses, like you said, are mobility, verticality, and being really forced to stay tight to their two supports.
Right. One other thing I'll add, and then we'll go ahead and get out of here, is that we have seen that this new character called Sombra, we saw her teased for like six months. And when, as you guys are kind of talking about, you know, how do we get past shields and effective abilities that these tanks have, Sombra beats that a lot of the time. Now,
she wasn't a piece of literal paper.
What are you giving up for that is the thing.
Pay attention here. Because, I mean, we saw Sombra on a few different maps here in the last couple of tournaments. And what they did is that, you know, you throw a hack on a health pack. Whenever your team members use that health pack, you gain ultimate. When you get that ultimate, you just disabled. Tell you what, how effective is Reinhardt without the shield?
Yeah, zero. But you're basically useless zero. As a Sombra until that hack. She doesn't really give anything else to the team until she gets that ult, and I think that's her biggest fault.
At the very beginning,
especially
I agree
against
with you.
Ult. Yeah.
At the very beginning, I totally 100% agree with you, but at the same time, I say, how much of that first fight on a 2-point capture map is just building up ultimates and see who can build up that first and second ultimate the fastest? Because that's a lot of times what it is. And if you have a Sombra that can EMP that right away, you might be able to get there. Again, I'm not saying this. I'm not saying go home and play Sombra. I'm just saying there is one hero who on paper directly talks and counters what we're talking about, that people probably haven't figured out yet. And we're starting to see it in the competitive meta. We're starting to see it being taken out at the same time. Other teams are going, oh, we tried that. On paper, it looks good, but we weren't able to execute. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. So we would love to hear, tell you what, we'd love to hear how you deal with a three tank comp in Overwatch. Send us an email, lied to you, the payload at bluespro.com.
Strike one, John.
You know what? I mean, I can shut it down right now. Just done. Bye. Let me know how you feel about that. Anyways, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Send us an email to thepayload@blizzpro.com. Ways that you're dealing with the three tank comp or other unique synergies that we may have missed. Because this, I think this is really important. I don't think three tanks are going to go away, at least in the near future, barring any major changes on the PTR that end up going live, which they do a lot of. Anyways,
time is money, friends, and we're almost flat broke.
Yeah, it's that time. People say I'm not very gracious as a host. They say that I don't give extra time. Nobody actually does, but I'm trying to make myself the good guy here. It's we hit a long show, and it was a good show, and I'm thankful for it. Let's get out of here. We didn't get any emails this week. I would love to read your emails on the show. thepayload@blizzpro.com. That's our email. I swear, I must have been saying the wrong thing because I know how much you guys like to talk about Overwatch, and I'm just not seeing enough of it. Anyways, send us your emails to thepayload@blizzpro.com. All right, Jimmy, what do we got going on in Patreon world this week?
Well, first of all, we've got to thank our MVPs, Adam B, J, A, Coral, and Tommy H. Thank you all so very much for supporting the show. If you would like to show your support for the show, head on over to patreon.com/payloadpodcast and check out all our tiers of wonderful options there, as well as we're getting close to the $200 merch store. So why don't you go ahead over there if you do enjoy the show. Go ahead and donate to the Patreon and get us to that $200 merch store.
Yes! Let's do it. Oh my god, I feel like I forgot somebody who said, hi, I want to be a part of the payload. So, before we do that, Rosh, what do we have going on in the other part of the world?
Well, iTunes, these reviews help us immensely on a week-to-week basis, so huge shout-out to Anthrax Rainbow for leaving us one this last week. If you haven't left a review and would like to support the podcast in an amazing and incredibly easy way, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcasts. So leave us a review. It helps us out a ton.
Yep. So I did lie. I knew I forgot something. Do you guys know how much extra work it takes to make this show happen? It's so
much. I do.
Can't do it anymore. Anyways, we do want to say a happy welcome to Grimace92 to the Payload family. Welcome. We thank you for your Patreon support. Sorry that John Kick Tripod sucks. Sorry that he sucks. He's the worst. And as soon as somebody else wants to take over as main host of the payload, I'll be the first one to leave. But either way, thank you so much for your support. And welcome, welcome, welcome to the family. All right, shout outs for the week. Let's do it. First, Kevin, you haven't talked in like 3 minutes. So I'm sure you're itching too. So shout outs for the week.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, OK. So like, this is not a crazy week for me. I'm actually going to look forward to a nice weekend off. I'm going to get my PC Overwatch placements out of the way because I didn't have time to last week with work. I don't have a whole lot, but I do want to toss a teaser out
of
there.
Of room in that extra small women's T-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. No, I want to throw out a little teaser for you guys. We're going to have a special announcement next week. on our next episode. We've got some very cool stuff coming. We talked about it amongst the crew earlier. Can't say anything right now, but we do have some very cool news for you guys coming up next week. So you should join us live on next week's show and come hear all the cool things that we have going on in the not so distant future.
Amazing. I know it exactly what it is. It's a signed football. It's a signed football. All right, Rosh. Whoa, what's going on with you this week?
I am just streaming. I have been putting in more hours streaming this last week than I think I ever have, and it's been really paying off, so it's been really
Welcome
exciting.
Back.
Thank you. It's been really exciting, and my streams have been really fun. I've also introduced a new concept to my stream on Sundays, where I do viewer games now. So if you ever want to play with me on Sundays, I literally do viewer games all day. So just throw me a message, add me on Battle.net. I'm always down to play Sundays on stream. We get to have fun, all that.
It's Ross Twitch. Won't play with me.
You're always on console. What?
You're the one who complains about
Should
the
probably
matchup.
Go follow her on Twitch, man.
Yeah.
You have a Twitch channel? Where is that?
Oh yeah. Make sure you follow me on twitch.tv/okayitsrosh. I just started it, so it would be really cool to hear your follow. But yeah, I'm just working on streaming, so I'll be there all week.
All right. Awesome. Jimmy, what about you, man?
Well, in the world of Heroes, we're wrapping up the HGC North American qualifiers, which I'll be a part of a little bit kind of this weekend as well. So the final qualifiers for that. And then diving into my placements, just like Kevin, I haven't been able to do my placements yet, but there's a friend of mine that I've done placements with last season. We had a lot of fun. So trying to get him back into Overwatch and play those.
Finish that up, okay?
I know.
All right, Kevin, you're last. Make it good. Take your glasses off first.
I guess you have to make your announcements after.
Do we have you go? Oh, yeah, you didn't talk for 3 minutes.
You can find more Overwatch stuff throughout the week.
No, because I have to do my shoutouts. You can find me streaming on twitch.tv/kicktripod. I was on Convert to Raid this last week, so if you want to hear about all Blizzard games... especially World of Warcraft. Pretty close. Like. Pat called me a regular this week.
There you go.
That is a big deal because Pat Crane is maybe one of two big names in the Overwatch, or not Overwatch, the Blizzard podcast industry. Maybe three. So you should check it out if you're like, you know what, John, I like Overwatch, but I like all games. You know. You can go check it out. ConvertRaid.com is all there as well. So, cool. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Wait, I lied. I've been doing some more stuff on the YouTubes. So, Twitch.
Are you okay tonight?
And he's out. We lost him. Oh, man. Poor guy.
No, I'm back. Find me on YouTube to Google Kick Tripod YouTube, maybe. I don't know how you even find my sweet small
find
little
him
channel.
On the intertubes.
Yeah. internet.com/googleyoutube. It should be right there. And okay. All right, we're gonna get out of here. So you can find more Overwatch stuff throughout the week at overwatch.blizzbro.com. If I get any sass from chat, I'm just banning people right now. Thank you to Jake Buttono at jakebuttono.ca for our music, and find us on Twitter at Payload Podcast. We are on Facebook as well at facebook.com/payload podcast, and of course patreon.com/payload podcast as well if you want to support the show. Please send us your emails. Use the email. Your grandma knows how to email. You know how to email. Send us emails, thepayload@blizzpro.com. And of course, your iTunes reviews are greatly, greatly appreciated. I'm making Rosh read them every week because I figured if there's one voice you want to hear reading your reviews, it's going to be Rosh. Yeah. Last but not least, find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcasts. This has been episode number 48 of The Payload. We will see you next week, guys. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye. Goodbye. Goodbye, Kevin. Good night. Good luck getting out of that t-shirt tonight. So
thanks, buddy.
Yeah, you got it. Have a good night. See ya. Bye.
The Payload is a production of BlizzPro. Find out more about Overwatch at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can find your host throughout the week on social media. Find Jimmy on Twitter at DJ Tyrant, Kevin on Twitter at Lack of Realism, and John on Twitter at Kicked Tripod.